Each time that I'm asked to fill in here, I go into the list of readings for that week. And sometimes you'll come across a reading that hits you right away. And, well, I can really do something with that. And other times there are readings that, oh, that would be too easy. Well, the reading today wasn't too easy. A little more challenging. Because it's from the Old Testament. It's from the book of Kings. Oh boy, I heard it. Oh boy. In our Bible, the book of Kings is broken into two parts, 1 Kings and 2 Kings. Originally, it was just one long story. It covers the history of the people of Israel. And it goes from the end of the rule of King David to the Babylonian exile. It picks up where the book of Samuel ended. David has unified the tribes of Israel, and then following David, his son Solomon reigns, and following Solomon, Israel splits itself into two, and there's a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. And after many years of strife, there's the Babylonian exile, where Jerusalem is destroyed and the people are taken from their homeland. Now, the book of Kings is called a historical account. And I don't think it's historical in the way we think of a history book. Because basically, it's an evaluation of the kings of that time according to three things. Did they worship the God of Israel alone? Did they rid Israel of idolatry? And were they faithful to the covenant like David? And in most cases, they failed miserably. In addition to this historical account, the book of Kings introduces the role of the prophets. They speak on God's behalf. They're like covenant watchdogs. They call out idolatry and injustice in the land. And they challenge the people of Israel to repent and follow their God. Our reading this morning includes the prophet Elijah, King Ahab, who's a king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and his Canaanite wife, Jezebel. Now, to honor his wife, King Ahab has built a temple to worship the Canaanite god of Baal. And God wasn't too happy with that. King Ahab probably pushed God's patience farther than any other king had to that point. So God sent Elijah to tell King Ahab that no dew or rain would fall till Elijah said it would fall. So they were in for a long drought. And our reading this morning begins 3 years later. Now, I took the reading that was suggested and I added a little bit to it because the reading by itself didn't make a lot of sense to me. So the story's a little bit longer today than maybe usually. But during the third year without rain, the Lord spoke his word to Elijah. Go and meet King Ahab, and I will soon send rain. So Elijah went to meet Ahab. By this time, there was no food in Samaria. King Ahab sent for Obadiah, who was in charge of the king's palace. Obadiah was a true follower of the Lord. When Jezebel was killing all the Lord's prophets, Obadiah hid 100 of them in 2 caves, 50 in one cave and 50 in another. He also brought them food and water. Ahab said to Obadiah, "Let's check every spring and valley in the land. Maybe we can find enough grass to keep our horses and mules alive and not have to kill our animals." So each one chose a part of the country to search. Ahab went in one direction and Obadiah in another. While Obadiah was on his way, Elijah met him. Obadiah recognized Elijah. So he bowed down to the ground and said, "Elijah, is it really you, master?" "Yes," Elijah answered. "Go tell your master that I am here." So Obadiah went to Ahab and told him where Elijah was. Then Ahab went to meet Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he asked, "Is it you, the biggest troublemaker in Israel?" Elijah answered, "I have not made trouble in Israel. You and your father's family have made all this trouble by not obeying the Lord's commands. You have gone after the Baals. Now tell all Israel to meet me at Mount Carmel. Also bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." So Ahab called all the Israelites and those prophets to Mount Carmel. Elijah approached the people and said, "How long will you not decide between two choices? If the Lord is the true God, follow him. But if Baal is the true God, follow him." But people said nothing. Elijah said, "I am the only prophet of the Lord here, but there are 450 prophets of Baal. Bring two bulls. Let the prophets of Baal choose one bull and kill it and cut it into pieces. And let them put the meat on the wood, but they are not to set fire to it. I will prepare the other bull, putting the meat on the wood, but not setting fire to it. You prophets of Baal, pray to your God, and I will pray to the Lord. The God who answers by setting fire to his wood is the true God." All the people agreed that this was a good idea. Then Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "There are many of you, so you go first. Choose a bull and prepare it. Pray to your God, but don't start the fire." So they took the bull that was given to them and prepared it. They prayed to Baal from morning till noon, shouting, "Baal, answer us." But there was no sound, and no one answered. They danced around the altar they had built. At noon, Elijah began to make fun of them. "Pray louder," he said. "If Baal really is a god, maybe he is thinking, or busy, or traveling. Maybe he is sleeping, so you'll have to wake him." The prophets prayed louder, cutting themselves with swords and spears until their blood flowed, which was the way they worshipped. The afternoon passed, and the prophets continued to act like this until it was time for the evening sacrifice, but no voice was heard. Baal did not answer, and no one paid attention. Then Elijah said to all the people, "Now come to me." So they gathered around him, and Elijah rebuilt the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. At the time for the evening sacrifice, the prophet Elijah went near the altar. "Lord, you are the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel," he prayed. "Prove that you are the God of Israel, and that I am your servant. Show these people that you command me to do all these things. Lord, answer my prayer so these people will know that you, Lord, are God, and that you will change their minds." Then fire from the Lord came down and burned the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the ground around the altar. When all the people saw this, they fell down to the ground crying, "The Lord is God. The Lord is God." Then Elijah said, "Capture the prophets of Baal. Don't let any of them run away." The people captured all the prophets. Then Elijah led them down to the Kishon Valley, where he killed them. Then Elijah said to Ahab, "Now go eat and drink, because a heavy rain is coming." So King Ahab went to eat and drink. At the same time, Elijah climbed to the top of Mount Carmel, where he bent down to the ground with his head between his knees. Then Elijah said to his servant, "Go and look towards the sea." And the servant went and looked. "I see nothing," he said, Elijah told him to go and look again. This happened 7 times, and 7 times the servant said, I see a small cloud, the size of a human fist, coming from the sea. Elijah told the servant, go to Ahab and tell him to get his chariot ready to go home now. Otherwise, the rain will stop him. After a short time, the sky was covered with dark clouds. The wind began to blow, and soon the heavy rain began to fall. Ahab got in his chariot and started back to Jezebel. The Lord gave his power to Elijah. He tightened his clothes around him and ran ahead of King Ahab all the way to Jezebel. Now, this is the reading for today. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life like the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. Elijah was afraid. He got up and fled for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah. He left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a solitary broom tree. He asked that he might die. It is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I am no better than my ancestors. Then he lay down under the broom tree and fell asleep. Suddenly an angel touched him and said to him, get up and eat. He looked, and there at his head was a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. He ate and drank and lay down again. The angel of the Lord came a second time, touched him and said, get up and eat, otherwise the journey will be too much for you. He got up and ate and drank. Then he went in the strength of the food for 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. At that place he came to a cave and spent the night there. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, what are you doing here, Elijah? He answered, I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I am alone, and they are seeking my life to take it away. He said, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks into pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, what are you doing here, Elijah? He answered, I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, throw down your altars, and killed your prophets with a sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away. Then the Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. Elijah was sent back to finish what he had started. Now we'll get to more of a deeper meaning of what all this reading means in a minute, but I have to be honest with you, whenever I see a reading like this, from so long ago, my first thought is, how in the world is this going to help me get through the week ahead? How is this reading for so many years ago going to help me get through tomorrow? The world now is such a different place than it was almost 3,000 years ago. Just think of how things have changed. There's been over 1 million sunrises since Elijah stood on that mountain. How could anything from so long ago possibly make any difference to me today? But maybe we shouldn't look at the things that are different. Maybe it'd be good to look at the things that are the same. And if we take away everything that's different, we just might be left with one thing. Something that is exactly the same now as it was 3,000 years ago. And that's emotion. How we feel. Fear 3,000 years ago feels the same today. Love, envy, joy, depression, lust, gratitude, pride. They never change because they're inside us. It's kind of a package deal. Every living creature has feelings. We're born with them, and they change over time depending on how our life goes. But they're always there, and they probably control more of what we do than anything else. When was the last time that you had a thought or spoke a word or did anything that an emotion of some kind was not the driving force behind it? Our emotions really make us who they are. They're like a cocktail we carry around with us. They make us all different because we see through that lens of emotion. They create the framework for our lives. They can certainly be a blessing. There's nothing more joyful than the laughter of a newborn baby. Doesn't matter what kind of day you're having, you hear a little baby laugh, and you just have to smile. It can also be a curse. Fear. How many times have you not done something because you were afraid? And maybe you got to the point where you just couldn't put it off any longer and you had to do it, and you ended up thinking, well, that wasn't so bad. Why did I wait so long? Could be something simple like just apologizing to someone. So if we took a minute and thought of all of the emotions that we have felt in the past week, you made a list in your head. And there's, you know, all the emotions that publicly people see, but all the ones that you feel that you kind of keep for yourself. And if you just had that list of all of them, is faith on that list? If our emotions drive who we are, what we think, what we do, shouldn't be faith be part of that list? There's so many things in life that we have control over. And you can choose if you want to have control over them or not. It's up to you, and you have to live with your decisions. But then again, there's just as many things that we have no control over. That's when our emotions can get out of hand. The key is to find a little balance. Maybe faith can give you that balance if you let it. Finding a moment of quiet in the middle of a storm, your faith will be there waiting for you. I read a lot of things about today's reading and what people thought, and it basically came down to this. How can you do, and this is a question from God to all of us, how can you do all the things that I need you to do if you are not where I need you to be? When I read that, I thought, well, how am I supposed to know where God wants me to be? Do I need to be sitting in this pew, or should I be sitting over there? Should I walk down this side of the street or the other side? Do I go out today? Do I stay home? How do I know? Is there a GPS coordinate that he's going to send me? I don't think they're talking about a place. I think they're talking about what's in here. Relying on your faith is an emotion to give you the balance and keep you where you need to be. How can you do all the things that I need you to do if you are not where I need you to be?